Welcome to the Blockchain Life with your host, Wall Street Journal and USA Today's best-selling author, Carrie Oberbrunner. In each episode, we explore relevant topics that help you keep your world connected and protected. Thanks for joining the conversation today. Let's begin.
Hey folks, it's Carrie Oberbrunner and I have with me a fantastic guest today. I'm so excited. Let me quick give the setup. But first of all, Fuzz, welcome. Tell us your official name and are you a doctor? And you know, give us the full thing.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, by the way. And my name's Fuzzle Rana. I'm a biochemist by training. You can call me Fuzz. Everybody does. And I work for an organization called Reasons to Believe, which explores the interface between science and the Christian faith. As a biochemist, I've branched out into a lot of areas outside of biochemistry that to me have, you know, fascinating science faith implications.
Yes. I want to give people the quick story because some people might not be of a faith background. And I just want you to know, if that's you, welcome, because we've had all kinds of people on this podcast and you are welcome to join us. So don't turn it off. And here's why. What I appreciate about Fuzz is his books, Human 2.0. Is that your only book or do you have multiple books?
Oh, I've written maybe 9 or 10 books over the years. Yeah.
Okay. Give us, what are some other topics that your
books are? Well, as a biochemist, I'm very interested in questions relating to the origin of life and the design of biochemical systems. So I've written 4 books in that particular category. Also very interested in the question of human origins as well.
Yeah.
How do we make sense of kind of the biblical description of human origins and human nature in light of modern day anthropology? So I've done work in that area as well. So
I got a question about that at the end.
Sure.
From your book. Because you mentioned, I think it was your book, you mentioned Neanderthals a lot.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about that because we'll save that for the end though. But what I appreciate about Fuzz is that, folks, I've really been onboarding a lot of the authors, influencers, entrepreneurs who listen to this episode, this podcast. I've been onboarding them into Web3. And Web3 is essentially the new phase of the internet, the embodied internet, the immersive internet. And as a result, we're naturally seeing things like the metaverse, NFTs, crypto. One of the things that we've seen is transhumanism. And when I found Fuzz, I literally said, thank you, God, because before that I found some, I'm just going to say it, some lame Christians who I feel like they weren't being balanced. And maybe you can talk about this and just get started with the fact that why do some Christians deny tech or are hypocritical towards tech? Why is that, first of all?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I, you know, I think part of it is the concern that Christians have that as human beings, we may be playing outside of our lane. You know, you oftentimes hear this question, should we play God, with the idea from a Christian perspective that no, we never want to play God. And I have a different take on that question. I think that because as human beings, according to the Christian worldview, we bear God's image, we're image bearers. And that means we reflect in some way features or aspects of our Creator. And if our Creator is a creator, then we're going to create too. So in other words, as Christians, or really as human beings, we can't help but to play God because we bear God's image. The concern becomes, are we trying to take God's place? And so that is the right question to ask. And it leaves a lot of space for science and technology. In fact, as a Christian, I see science and technology as an imperative of the faith. You know, and so I think that's probably it's a genuine sense of humility.
Yeah.
But I think it's as you're pointing out, it's an unsophisticated view of science and technology.
I loved that about your book, that you said that straight out. You're like, should we play God? Yes. According to Genesis 1, we're called to play God, but I know what you're saying. Imitate him as co-creators, not replace God. That's perfect. I love that. So other questions would be, we are putting in our ears technology, ear hearing aids. Now it's implants. You have a generation that's now becoming cyborgs. I mean, have you seen some of this crazy stuff?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. So that one guy who put an antenna in his head and it's like an implant. But where does it stop? I mean, you know, we say, oh, the prosthetic limb with brain computer interface is okay if your leg gets chopped off. But pretty soon you see this line of, hey, if I can squat 600 pounds and sprint for 500 miles, why don't I just cut off my leg and put some of that? Like, where is the line?
You know, that's a great question, because I think most people are fully comfortable with this type of technology for biomedical purposes to help people that are suffering from diseases or debilitating injuries. You know, but there could very well be legitimate reasons why you would want to modify your biological makeup. You know, maybe, you know, just a scenario off the top of my head, you know, what if you are working in construction and it would help to wear an exoskeleton so that you could go in and maybe lift and move very heavy things and with greater precision? You know, I could envision, you know, those kinds of applications just as an example. And of course, having a brain computer interface implanted in your brain, giving you that seamless control of the exoskeleton, where you even have a sense of ownership, you know, where it feels like it's part of your body, could make perfect sense. And I don't see that as necessarily, you know, compromising our identity or even our dignity as human beings. So there is a line, and I've been thinking about this for a number of years, and I still not quite sure where that line is.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing that's challenging about this. And people that, you know, very good people with, you know, the best of intentions who are actually pro technology, you know, could, you know, very well draw that line in different places. Now, some people that are transhumanists think that we ought to use the technology to actually evolve ourselves.
Yes.
You know, into post-humans.
Yes.
But as I've interacted with transhumanists who even hold to a materialistic worldview, some of them are very uncomfortable with that idea, where they do see limits, where they don't want to lose our identity as human beings. So it's messy. It's absolutely messy. But this is why I think, you know, people really from all worldviews really need to understand the technology, understand the prospects of the technology, and really begin to engage in serious conversations about really what are the limits, and how do we, you know, how do we, you know, maybe enforce the limits, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is why I loved your book, because I've read a lot on this topic now. You have Alcor out in Phoenix, who is basically cryopreservation, your head. And there's a whole society that, I don't know if you feel this way, but the term singularity, where it's, you know, the concept where artificial intelligence supersedes human intelligence. As I've read some of these books, they almost relate to this thing like the rapture. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's literally what I feel like. Their hope is in not a resurrection in the Christian sense. It's in the sense that we're going to upload our memories and brains into new vehicles of technology. Do you see that growing? I mean, I know it sounds sci-fi, but like the technology is catching up.
Yeah, I do. Well, and for example, on is it maybe Amazon Prime or Netflix, there's a program called Upload, you know, which is essentially, you know, envisioning that as being the afterlife, where your digital essence gets uploaded into this
I didn't know that
I'm writing computer that down. Environment.
I'm writing that down.
I can't remember which
but you know, Prime streaming service might be up. So it's called up. Oh, are you talking about the show?
Yes, the show.
Yes. I heard about that.
Yeah. So it's exactly what you're describing.
Yes.
Right. You know, and you know this. I mean, I personally am skeptical that we're ever going to be able to do that type of thing where we could create kind of a digital copy of ourselves. Now, you know, but I know why people are becoming increasingly excited about it, because we're seeing some incredible progress being made in brain-computer interface technology, where, you know, people have done preliminary experiments showing that you can begin to tether brains together. This has been done in rats. You know, it's fascinating work where you can have two rats that can see each other. One of them is trained to actually hit a lever to get a reward. The other one isn't trained in that way. And by tethering their brains together with these brain computer interfaces, the rat that knows how to get the reward can actually somehow instruct or direct the rat that doesn't know how to get the reward to push the lever. And so there's the capacity to tether brains together, or at least that's what it appears. You know, some of these brain computer interfaces are becoming very sophisticated.
Yeah.
You know, where machine learning algorithms can extract intent, user intent. And so, you know, this is exciting stuff, to be certain.
Yes.
But, you know, it's the type of stuff that I think leads us to think that maybe the singularity is actually achievable, but it's assuming a particular perspective on consciousness. It's a particular perspective on the brain and the mind, you know, and you know, it's just assuming that memory is like data that you would store on a hard drive, that memories are just videos playing in our minds. And I think people that, you know, have expertise in neuroscience, I unfortunately don't, would question whether those are actually useful models, you know, for thinking about the brain and the mind and consciousness and what memories are, you know. But, you know, if you adopt that kind of hardware software model, then these types of advances really pave the way, I think, for, you know, really the hope that the singularity may be possible.
Well, and that is what is being proposed, meaning that our brains, our memories are what, software, and we just need a new hardware, which is i.e. a machine based body. Is that kind of the concept?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I even saw recently a headline that said one day Jimmy will meet his dead grandfather.
Yeah.
In other words, taking someone today who's alive, downloading all of their, while they're living, all of their quirks, their memories, their speech, and then someday when Jimmy is born, he could actually engage in the metaverse with his dead grandfather. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, you know, this is bringing up, I think, one of the primary criticisms that I've seen leveled against kind of the transhumanist vision for salvation, and that is that what we end up saving isn't actually us. So if I'm somehow able to upload my mind and my memories into some kind of digital framework, what's existing now is a digital copy of myself that may attain a type of immortality. But when I die, I'm dead, right? And so that's the same concept, I think, about, you know, meeting your grandfather one day in the metaverse, is that you've created a digital replica, you know. And you know, I've seen people suggest that kind of thing with holograms, where, you know, you could, studying, you know, their behavior, the things that they've put on social media, the things they've written, anything that you, recordings you have, and kind of extract, you know, with AI, their values, their mindset, and that you can have conversations with people as if they really still were around, you know, and so you don't necessarily lose that wisdom or what have you. But again, you're not really having a true conversation with that person. It's a replica, right?
Interesting.
That's very, you know, this is called the salvation paradox by philosophers of technology.
So basically your take is that scripture talks about to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord for those believers. So you believe that a soul, you know, even if the quote physical body and even the mental can be salvaged, the soul has an account, and that can't skirt around that judgment.
Yes, that's exactly right. So my particular worldview would see, again, there, that the fact that there is an immaterial aspect of our nature, we could call it the soul, that does interface in with our brains. You know, so I think the mind is actually immaterial, and that it is, you know, immortal in that sense.
Wow.
You know, that it would exist beyond our physical body. But, you know, part of Christian theology too is that one day that there will be resurrected bodies that we'll have, where that soul will then be ensouled again within a physical body. I mean, in some respects, you know, that vision for the future that Christians hope in is a type of transhumanism, where
you know,
this body that is full of limitations will be replaced by a resurrection body.
Yeah.
That won't suffer thusly. So
I love that. I love that. And your book's so fascinating because it gives, in my opinion, there's two extremes with transhumanism. One is, let's deny faith, let's deny God, let's deny spirit, and let's just go with science. And unfortunately, there's a lot of Christians who do the opposite, where it's, hey, let's just, you know, study the spirit only. And yet the hypocrisy that I was mentioning was, yet they'll still use pacemakers, they'll still use prosthetics, they'll still use medicine, they'll still use all this other tech, but they'll somehow deny that they value it. Do you think that this comes down, Fuzz, to motivation and hope? Like, what are we placing our hope in?
Yeah, you know, that's really an insightful question on your part. And I had not thought of it in those terms. What is creating that dichotomy? But I think motivation very well may be the ultimate factor. That is, as Christians, they see the motivation of transhumanism as, you know, essentially trying to come up with an alternative gospel that is, you know, looking to science and technology to save us. And I think probably transhumanists that at least hold to a materialistic worldview, there are some that actually don't, some that actually are theists, but, you know, believe it or not, it's transhumanism isn't a monotheistic a monolithic mindset by any means. There's a range of views among transhumanists. But, you know, they probably look at Christians and see that the motivation is simply wishing based on faith for some kind of salvation that they question will ever come. And so I think motivation may be actually what creates the odds, which is, to me, you know, an interesting insight. But one of the things that I try to point out in Humans 2.0 is the idea that there are a lot of bridge points between Christianity and transhumanism. Mm. I mean, you know, both recognize that the world that we live in isn't the way it's supposed to be, that there is human pain and suffering, and that we want to do what we can to mitigate pain and suffering. And both Christians and non-believers alike, particularly those that hold to a transhumanist vision, see science and technology as useful towards mitigating pain and suffering. We want to see human beings flourish. We want to see a world where there's justice, right? We see death as unnatural. There's a sense that there's a purpose and a destiny for each individual and for the human species that is somehow, it's tragic when that individual's life comes to an end because that purpose and that destiny seems to be lost.
Mm.
You know, and so those are shared, you know, ideals that,
yes,
that Christians and transhumanists have. The big difference really is, where do we find our source for salvation? Is it in the person of Christ, or is it in science and technology? And so, you know, when we realize that, it helps me to look at transhumanists as really not people to be afraid of as a Christian, but really, yeah, people that I want to get to know because there's ways that we could work together to you know, to bring in a powerful and promising future. But, you know, at the same time, there's just a lot of ethical issues connected with this technology. And, you know, and I don't think a materialistic worldview is well equipped to handle those ethical issues in the way that the Christian worldview can.
Yeah. First century Gnosticism. You know, is this just a new flavor where material is essentially bad, so let's do whatever we want, let's trash it, you know, we need to evolve into another higher level? Do you think this is a new flavor of Gnosticism? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a very interesting insight, because you know, in many respects, many transhumanists would hold to an evolutionary origin to humanity. They were the product of evolution. And as a result of that, they don't really see anything fundamentally sacred about the human body.
Yeah.
It's the product of evolution. It's riddled with flaws that are a vestige of our evolutionary history. So we can step in and correct those flaws and mitigate pain and suffering. We're just on we're on this evolutionary way station right now in terms of our present form. You know, transhumanists would argue we're going to continue to evolve. So why not take control of our own evolution and really produce human beings that would be ideally suited to live in a technologically oriented future?
Yeah.
And so I guess it is a type of Gnosticism where, you know, there's nothing sacred about the human body, you know, and from a Christian perspective, I think there is this sense that the whole individual as a human being is indeed sacred, that we don't view ourselves as ghosts in the machine, but that there is this integration of our immaterial material aspect, both of which are sacred. And so that would be a place of strong divergence. And so, you know, many of the ethical issues that Christians would see with, you know, transhumanism, or at least the transhumanist vision, would be, in a sense, a loss of human dignity and human value, or, you know, that loss of, or the exploitation of human beings in the process of creating a transhumanist future. I don't think transhumanists would be in favor of exploiting human beings, but unfortunately, much of this technology is very, very easily lends itself towards that end.
Yeah. Well, even the Apostle Paul talking about how our bodies are temple of the Holy Spirit, there's a sacredness to the material in Scripture that you don't really find in a extreme transhumanist, where it's kind of like, all right, this part's no longer really needed, I can upgrade this, I can upgrade that. And I think the question then is, where do we lose our humanity with the transhumanism? Where is that line where you've gone too far? Is it your body's 51% machine? You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is becoming very, very real, very fast.
It is. And, you know, and it's not easy. And I think probably both you and I would intuitively look at certain modifications and say, we really are uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
But it's hard to, at this point in time, to articulate why that seems to be, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, you're speaking to a former pastor here. I mean, for years we've had, you know, not to get into graphic stuff, but you've had certain women augmenting their bodies, you know, and think about that, even the term augmented, you know, and we have augmented reality now, right? We have virtual reality, but you get to this point where, where is it okay for one person, or medically speaking, but then the enhancement part of it, would I like to run, you know, 50 miles an hour for 100 miles straight? Probably. I think what's fringe today is going to be mainstream tomorrow.
Yeah.
And this is where that cyborg concept, you know, I got my next book coming out with blockchain. But I want to show you a chart right here, because your book fits front and center with this Let me show this to you here. If people are podcast listeners, they'll have to, Chrome has lost permission to capture your screen. Interesting. All right, can do it now. But here's what I basically say on this chart. I basically say that transhumanism is an extreme version of Web 3. Mm. Web 3, you know, this is where I love to reside, Fuzz, is the fact that 5G and AR and VR and metaverse and crypto, it's all converging, in my opinion, to create something very unique and scary and good, a new reality. But then I believe that some people within this new space are seeing it as transhumanism as the ultimate. I mean, you remember The Matrix, right? Your book, you talk a lot about, Iron Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome, man. Folks, you got to get his book. I'm telling you, the audio version just came out. The book came out in 2019.
Yes.
But I listened to it, and I listened to other things that are current. I don't know how they did it, but it's so current. But why did you bring in Iron Man a lot?
Well, one is I'm kind of a comic book nerd. So
yeah, I could tell you were weaving it in. I'm a Matrix nerd, so yeah.
And to me, Iron Man is kind of the quintessential, you know, transhumanist superhero, because, you know, Tony Stark's real superpower is his genius. Yeah. And so he builds this armor that helps him to transcend his biological limits. And as you look at the Iron Man story arcs over the years, you know, increasingly he's integrating that armor into his biological makeup. It goes from just simply wearing the armor to really integrating that armor, you know, in him. And in fact, in a, you know, fairly recent story arc, Tony Stark ends up uploading his you know, digital, you know, essence, if you will, into a kind of a main, you know, into a computer system. And so he's now functioning like an AI. And so, you know, there's a lot of themes that deal with our relationship between science and our relationship as human beings with technology and, you know, and, you know, what are the limits of modifications, you know, and when does Tony Stark end and Iron Man begin? And so, great philosophy of technology in the Iron Man comics, which really is relevant to, you know, what we're talking about here, of course.
Oh yeah. So here's a question. I want to talk about reasons to believe. That's the organization you're part of, correct?
Yes, that's right.
So did they publish the book?
Yes, this is we have a publishing arm at Reasons to Believe called RTB Press.
Okay.
And so we will typically publish approximately 3 books a year.
Okay.
That are, you know, written by people that are part of the RTB team.
Yeah.
You know, one of our visions is actually to spin RTB Press off as its own publishing arm, you know, as its own independent publisher.
Yeah.
That would focus on publishing, you know, science, faith type of works.
Let's talk about that offline because we can do that. One thought I had, here's a little tip, take it back to your people. Your book, I think, has the legs and the prophetic nature and the relevance to go major mainstream. I really believe that. And here's the one tweak that I think it needs to make it happen. Could you, you know how in the book you mentioned multiple times, if this is too in-depth, go ahead and skip to X part. My thought, because I'm even a pretty technical guy, but you got into some crazy deep stuff with the how-to. I wonder if you could extract the main part there. And I know it would mess up the Iron Man narrative, but I just feel like there's so many people that would dive into that mini book concept that that would otherwise get lost with some of the other bookend of the, you know. So just think about that, because we've seen this. You know, I work with Dan Sullivan, strategic coach, and he takes some of his books and makes them mini books, and they're just digestible in a much easier way. But man, I thought, that one part of it, every person alive needs to read that part, because it's coming. I mean, you go to the headlines right now and you see Metaverse, Oculus, Activision. I mean, we're literally seeing this book come alive with headlines. Mm-hmm. Elon Musk, Neuralink,
yeah,
right? I mean, all that yeah. stuff.
Well, you know, and Elon Musk is a fascinating person to me in many, many ways. But, you know, part of his motivation for Neuralink and in creating, you know, brain-computer interfaces, and my understanding is that what he's done actually has propelled the technology forward in significant ways, that he's made some very significant improvements in the technology. But his primary motivation is concern that in short order, AI is going to be
take over. Yeah.
You know, far surpass our capabilities as humans. And unless we actually interface our brains with computer systems, we're not going to be able to compete. So he's maybe a reluctant transhumanist, or I don't know, or maybe he's embracing transhumanism, you know, with great vigor, but either way, he almost sees this as transhumanism as necessary because of the coming AI threat. So
in other words, if we don't integrate with machines soon, then we'll run two separate tracks, and that track will experience the singularity. And like the analogy is, hey, AI, you know, you give AI a command that says, hey, AI, you know, make the world more efficient. And it takes that command and says, I'll eliminate all humans. Because humans, you know, like in other words, it just can't feel the command. It just executes the command.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know, and there is an irony too, because to really have brain computer interfaces that can be used in a sophisticated way that Elon Musk envisions, you have to actually have AI technology to extract the user intent. You know, the electrical activity in the brain becomes so complex that unless you have some kind of machine learning algorithm to correlate that activity with different and subtle intents on the part of the user, you can't really get it to work. You know, it's one thing to be able to teach somebody to control the movement of a robotic limb. It's another thing, you know, to have sophisticated intentions communicated to, you know, electronic devices, to computer systems.
Yes.
And so he's relying on AI to save us from AI.
Interesting. So as we conclude here, as we wrap this up, what's your vision? Because, you know, for the person who's just listening, didn't you come from a Muslim background?
Yeah, I did. By the time I went to college, I pretty much had given up on Islam and settled into a position of agnosticism, but it was really the elegant designs of biochemical systems that I, you know, was learning about as a graduate student that really helped me to rediscover the creator and set me on a trajectory that led to my conversion to Christianity. So, you know, to me, I think science and faith really fit well together in many, many different ways.
Yeah.
That science provides us with reasons to, you know, for our faith. Science is a wonderful outlet for a person of faith to serve the world and to fulfill the Christian mission. And, you know, and I think science and technology is something that helps us ultimately as Christians to live out the kingdom of God principles in a way that we can mitigate suffering in the world, promote flourishing. So we shouldn't, you know, as Christians, we shouldn't be afraid of science and technology. And for scientists and technologists, they shouldn't be afraid of Christianity either.
Mm.
Right? It goes both ways.
Do you think an ultimate transhumanist could view one day having a faith or being a Christian is a inferior evolutionary gene? And therefore it needs to be eliminated?
You know, that's an interesting question. And I could easily see that school of thought emerging.
Yeah.
You know, particularly if you know, faith positions actually if faith positions actually stand in the way of, you know, uncontrolled advance in technology and
there you go.
In the transhumanist vision. You know, there's a, you know, I don't know that I would necessarily recommend it if somebody is from a Christian worldview, because there's, it's quite graphic, but it was Altered Carbon, 2 seasons on Netflix. And again, it just shows this dystopian type of future that arises out of kind of the transhumanist vision.
So it's called
Altered Carbon.
Carbon. Okay.
Yeah.
See, it's interesting you mentioned that, because you have that, you have the show Upload that I've heard about, which I hear is more even comedy. Like there's a comedic point. Then one of my friends was telling me, I haven't seen this one yet, but Black Mirror back in 2012-ish. But you see all of our media going this way as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is the thing that's interesting to me, is that because there's transhumanism has really been the fuel for science fiction, and now it's fiction becoming reality in front of our eyes. There's two things that happen. One is that we've already thought through a little bit about what technology can and can't do for us, and the dangers of technology, and the concern of a dystopian future. So that actually helps, I think, prepare our culture at large to maybe engage transhumanism with a bit of hesitancy and appropriate skepticism. Mm. But on the other hand, because we've been so inculcated with this type of science fiction, that some of the ideas of transhumanism that should to us cause us to raise our eyebrows don't, because
we've adopted it.
Yeah, we've become immune to it because of that exposure. Yeah. So, it's interesting to see science fiction becoming science reality in some remarkable ways. But in Altered Carbon, you know, there is a group of people who refuse to actually attain digital immortality, and they're religious people that, hey, when we die, we die. And it creates actually quite a bit of conflict within the society because of the religious people who are viewed as being, you know, Luddites and kind of, you know, backward type of people that are standing in the way of progress. And so I could easily see that kind of vision. So for me, this is why it's very important for Christians to actually become sophisticated in our understanding of the technology, to recognize the value and the power of the technology, how it can be used for good, and be willing to actually be people that are pioneering this technology as well, but also represent that voice, of reason, if you will, or that faith voice that, you know, suggests reasonable limits, to the technology.
This is so good. Folks, get Human 2.0 today. I'm telling you, it is one of the most important books. It's my favorite of 2022. I read a lot of books. And Fuzz, thank you so much. Where can people find out more about you personally and Reasons to Believe?
Yeah, the easiest thing to do would just be to go to our website, reasons.org, and check out, there's information about our organization, all types of science faith resources that people can access. That would be the easiest thing to do.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being here today, and I'll stick on with you and share a few things. Thanks, Fuzz.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Blockchain Life. We hope today's conversation ignited your soul and inspired your mind. Post your comments in a podcast review on iTunes or your platform of choice. We read every single review because your thoughts matter to us. Please share this episode with a friend. We look forward to seeing you again on the next episode.